Thank you, Pekka, for inviting me here, and it has been very interesting seminar this far. I hope to give some more insights in this final talk. My title is a little bit long, so I don't read it aloud to you. Important note here is my website. You can find basically links to all papers that I mention from there, and I hope it's easy to remember. I'm currently associate professor of biomedical image analysis at University of Eastern Finland at AI Virtanen Institute. AI doesn't refer to artificial intelligence, if you wonder. That's basically Research Institute of Neuroscience. But my background is computational, so previously I was in Madrid at Universidad Carlos III, and before that I was long time with Department of Signal Processing at Tampere University of Technology. The biomedical image analysis group is new thing in AI Virtanen Institute, so we are still growing, but we are now, I think myself plus seven persons, eight persons maybe, and a couple of visitors. So it's a pretty sufficient size. And a lot of research that I'm explaining is with collaborations with other institutes, maybe Montreal Neurological Institutes and Universidad Carlos III de Madrid are most important for this presentation. Okay, and about brain disorders. They are pretty important. It's estimated that the cost of brain disorders is 800 billion euros annually in Europe in 2010. This is numbers by De Luca and Olesen. So it's huge. And even a small improvement in care would improve many people's lives and would lead to substantial savings. And as Juha already told us, early and more accurate diagnoses are essential in that for many reasons. Because once, for example, often it is thought that you should start to treat, for example, dementia early enough, so there would be any chance of even slowing the disease progression. And similar conclusions hold also for other brain disorders like, for instance, ADHD. Do we even know what that is? I don't know. But these diagnoses need to be made more early to even develop treatments and made more accurate. Also, tools to follow the disease progression and the effect of potential treatment are important. And for that reason, it's important to have something quantitative tools, some quantitative tools that really could tell that something is going in the right direction or something is not going in the wrong direction with the treatment, at least. Also, of course, better understanding of these brain disorders is essential to generate some possible treatments for them. So this brings me to the brain imaging. Brain imaging is one sort of this quantitative information, provides this one sort of this quantitative information that you can have. And there are pretty many kinds of, pretty many different brain imaging techniques, going from anatomical to functional, different kind of things can be imaged. But what is important to understand maybe that we are still looking the brain at very macroscopic level in brain imaging. So it might be that it's too macroscopic that we should dig into deeper into details to really find reasons of these brain diseases. And why brain imaging is important for finding the early diagnosis is that changes in the brain often precede visible symptoms of diseases. This is a famous image about dementia or Alzheimer's disease by Clifford Jack that is kind of imaged cascade of disease progression. So, and we should really try to get the diagnosis already in here when people are still normal. So that is maybe possible with brain imaging. However, how the analysis in traditional brain imaging is done does not support these kind of predictions. We are typically comparing two groups of subjects and identifying locations in the brain where the differences happen between these two groups. There's no easy way to generate predictions, individual predictions about disease out of these traditional data analysis results. So, how to turn images into diagnosis? You already know the answer. It's machine learning, of course. And for machine learning, using brain imaging data, you need a large collection of brain images, and then you need to follow up the subjects for many years so you can decide the correct label for that person, that image was acquired many years ago. And this is, of course, one of the problems. It is very costly to generate this kind of data, but nowadays, fortunately, we have open access public or semi-public databases for that. And more of these kind of efforts are in a way. So this is example of our work of early diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. We have a database of subjects with MRIs at the baseline, and then These subjects are so-called MCI subjects, mild cognitive impairment subjects, which is midway between cognitively normal and Alzheimer's disease, but not all MCI subjects develop into Alzheimer's. And it's interesting question which one does progress into Alzheimer's. So we have MRIs of patients at the baseline, and then we have diagnosis at 3 years. And this is, by the way, with ADNI data. And there we get training data from this baseline, and we can attach the disease label at 3 years to that training data. And then we can learn to teach the machine learning algorithm, and then hopefully when the new subject comes, we can use this created classifier to say if he or she will convert to Alzheimer's or remain as MCI. So I don't want to throw all the traditional data analysis that has been done in brain imaging for 20 years or 30 years into a trash bin, but that is very useful as pre-processing operations to these machine learning algorithms, because we have very well functioning pipelines to segment images, segment MRIs, bring them into alignment, and we can utilize this information while creating the machine learning methods. For example, in previous slide, we used as features this smoothed gray matter density image of each subject. Of course, we can also generate some novel brain imaging features like local cortical gray-white contrast that seems to be quite predictive of development, in this case normal development, but we are hoping to use these features for also to study developmental disorders. Okay, then I'd like to move to other part of my talk, where I will say something that I consider important from technical or computational or mathematical aspects of machine learning applied to brain imaging, and give some partial answers how to answer to these questions. My favorite statistician Trevor Hastie has said that there are some powerful and exciting tools for making prediction from data, but they are not magic. You should be skeptical. They require good data and proper internal validation. This is, I think, very, very important statement to keep in mind. Especially in brain imaging and also in other fields like Arto mentioned, data is wide. So there can be thousands or millions of variables that are correlated and only hundreds of samples. This is, of course, bad. But there are tools to answer these questions. And essential questions in brain imaging is variable and feature selection techniques, and also variable or feature importance measurements that are kind of different thing. Important are the approaches combining imaging data to other kinds of data, like from genetics or neuropsychological testing or from lifestyle. This can be very, very useful data for evaluating brain disorders, maybe even better than brain imaging. Combining data from different sites is problematic. So if one person imaging is done in Jyväskylä and for other person in Kuopio, these images will not look equal, but we should do something to make them look more equal. And in more fundamental level, as already touched the points, that diagnoses are noisy. They are not correct. Data is imbalanced, or there is class imbalance. So it can be that 90% of our sample is normal and 10% has the disease that we are interested in. And this has nothing to do with the proportions that exist in general population. So this is kind of interesting problem, and I don't think it's been properly answered. Also, error estimates are noisy. I will come to that later. So, Sami already said, there are these feature selection algorithms that can be used to learn automatically most relevant features among thousands of candidates. And these typically work very well if you are interested in just in prediction. But often enough, you are also interested in what makes good predictions, what features you should use. And then this is starting to be somewhat problematic, because, for example, Lasso that was mentioned, if two variables are correlated, it's kind of randomly picks one of them. And this is of course not good thing. But there are these feature selection methods, and they are very, very useful. Is then this extra information that, for example, if we just take for Alzheimer's diagnosis or Alzheimer's prediction, just volume of hippocampus. That's single feature, very intuitive, very easy to train machine learning algorithm. No fancy computations needed at all. If we then take something more complicated, like these kind of gray matter densities that results in 30,000 features per subject, is this useful? In MCI to Alzheimer's conversion prediction, to some extent. But I don't think we have big enough data sets yet to answer to this question. It might be that if the data is very different, the simple volume of hippocampus beats everything sophisticated, derivable from MRI. In feature selection, the choice of method, feature selection method, seems to make the difference if the classification problem is hard enough. And in some applications, the feature selection method really matters, but I just have examples of applications where it matters and examples where it doesn't. I cannot really generalize so well, but it seems to matter in some cases and some cases not. Let's skip this variable importance. For combining brain imaging information to other kinds of information can be really helpful. For example, in our case, our MCI to AD conversion prediction algorithm is it's cross-validated. Our AUC is 0.76 if you use MRI only. But we made also this combined algorithm where we include cognitive testing features. And it increased AUC to 0.9.
So what is AUC?
AUC is area under the curve.
Area under the curve.
Area under the curve, area under the ROC curve. It's you can it's I'll explain it a little bit later because I'm running out of time.
5 minutes.
Yes, but this is also something that is quite difficult. This what we did here is basically a stacking model. But important finding here is this, that we should use low density separation, that is a semi-supervised learning method, to train the MRI classifier, which condenses quite many features. If you just concatenate the features, this won't work, because of the different number of features from every potential. Then about heterogeneity of MRI. So I mentioned that MRI acquired in Kuopio looks different than MRI acquired in Jyväskylä, but it does also that in other places. So if we consider simple data aggregation from different sites that we need to use if we want to have these huge databases of data, this does not quite work because they do look different. There's a possible solution. In machine learning, this is called domain adaptation. In machine learning, it's usually used for applications like speech recognition, where you have loads and loads of data. And if you don't have enough data, you can always acquire more data. So it's not the same as in brain imaging. Domain adaptation, type of domain adaptation techniques that is promising is so-called projection techniques, where we do a projection of this data of all sites to a space where they all kind of look similar. And our version of these techniques is based on partial least squares, where we actually try to first find the subspace where the data looks maximally dissimilar. And then when we take the complement of that subspace, we get similar looking data across the sites. This was evaluated using the Abide datasets, which is known for its badness in this sense. Um, And to the final slide before conclusions, I'd like to remind you that cross-validation-based error estimates have high variance. First of all, cross-validation is easy to misuse in machine learning. You can even do it by accident. If you are getting two good results, first thing that I look for is whether I have made some simple mistake during cross-validation. But CV-based error estimates have also high variance. And this is nothing new information. You note here 78. So if you have something with 50 samples, do not trust machine learning results just because of this. If you have something with 100 samples, you can start to trust if the learning algorithm is not very complex. And for those people who are dealing with images, I remind that n is here the number of subjects, not the number of images or number of pixels or voxels, but number of subjects. Okay, then to the conclusions. Brain imaging combined with machine learning is very potential for early diagnosis and follow-up with brain disorders, especially when we have more and more open data resources that data scientists can use. A lot of tools exist for brain image processing and machine learning with brain images, but uncritical use of these tools as black boxes, if you don't really understand what is happening, it's not optimal. And basic research will still be needed for variable selection, not so much about new methods, but about the properties of old methods. Variable importance, multi-view learning, that means combining different kinds of data to brain imaging data. There's a huge potential of making really important discoveries in this area. Tackling with the data heterogeneity, there starts to be few papers about this. And tackling with noisy labels, nobody has looked into this in brain imaging, at least as far as I know. Class imbalance and small sample size. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have time for one or two comments. Okay, please.
Thank you. See, I fully agree with those points that you mentioned there regarding class imbalances and that people don't really understand what the prediction value how is affected by prevalence and those type of things. Are there any, because I've been trying to teach those type of things in some courses, but there are no really good courses that address those type of things. Do it be something from an educational point of view?
Yeah, I think there is a need. Yes. 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 And they are problem, and they are problem that are solvable. If yes. Education is important in this respect. I agree.
There are a lot of courses there that are addressing this.
Yeah.
There are plenty of courses working on neural networks and AI and that kind of stuff. How to deal with those issues that you need there is much less
actually. Yeah. I agree completely.
Thank you very much.